The Brendan O'Connor Show on RTE Radio 1 with All Care Pharmacy. Discover a team that's always here to support you at All Care, taking care of communities across Ireland.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, time for our weekly look now at what we should all be watching until we meet again next week. Broadcaster Owen Sweeney and freelance pop culture journalist Jen Gannon join me now. Welcome, guys. Jen, I know nothing about this. I've managed to completely ignore it, but I know a lot of people very excited that Line of Duty is back.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like we've been waiting for this season, season six, forever. It's been two very long years. Filming was delayed several times because of COVID, but it's finally here. So it's very difficult to talk about Line of Duty specifically without giving away spoilers. And as usual, they're keeping the finer points of the plot a big secret. But just to say that the AC12 team are back. So you've got your Ted Hastings, Adrian Dunbar, Kate Fleming, Vicky McClure and DS Steve Arnott. That's Martin Compston. They're returning to work with a new recruit in tow. That's DC Chloe Bishop. She's played by Shalom Brun Franklin. And this time around, they have a DCI Joanne Davidson in their sights. Now, she's played by the brilliant Kelly MacDonald, and she's a senior investigating officer on an unsolved murder case. And her suspicious conduct attracts the attention of the anti-corruption squad. And she's been described as the most enigmatic adversary the AC12 have ever faced, which is no small claim considering the very complex cases they've unravelled in previous seasons. So it's back to what they know. And I think last season, a lot of people were kind of confused. It was very labyrinthine plot lines, but this year, this season, it's going to be what they're really good at. And that's given actresses this very layered, complex, antagonistic roles like we've seen before with Tandy Newton and Keely Hawes, who was so masterful in it. And I just think Line of Duty is such gripping viewing because no one is safe. Anyone can turn out to be a bent copper, and that's what's so enjoyable. You have this truly unpredictable story unfolding in front of you. And I love that it's a return to like good old-fashioned linear viewing. You can't binge it, so there's nobody ruining it on social media before you've even seen episode one. And I love that sense that it's bringing us all together, communal viewing, where we're all going to find out these twists together, and that makes it that bit more exciting. It's proper event TV.
Okay, that's Line of Duty, BBC One tonight. Of course, for a lot of people, what they love about Line of Duty is Adrian Dunbar and his and the way he might talk to you. Let's just take a few of Adrian Dunbar's greatest hits.
Superintendent Hastings, like the battle.
Mother of God.
I am calm. I'm totally bloody calm.
No, we're sucking diesel. Go on.
You didn't float up the lagoon on a bubble.
We weren't born yesterday, fella.
None of my people would plant evidence. They know I would throw the book at them, followed by the book shelf.
I know you would, Ted.
And I don't care whether it's one rotten apple or the whole bloody barrel.
Bet you a big pint of that cat's piss that you young fella seem to like so much.
Interview terminated. Go on. Piss off.
Catching criminals is tough enough, but catching coppers, God give me strength.
Frankly, son, right now, I couldn't give a shit.
Okay, I feel I've seen it now. I feel I got the best of it there. Owen, tell us about Operation Varsity Blues, which is on Netflix.
Yes, if you're thinking Felicity Huffman when I start talking about this, you'd be right. This is the college admissions scandal. It's I don't quite know how to describe it. It's kind of a documentary with bits of drama written into it. It reenactments. Remember, documentaries used to have reenactments that were kind of surreptitious phone calls and kind of taping up of wires and all that sort of stuff. And it was all done in a very hammy way. Well, now we've got Matthew Modine playing, I suppose, the real villain of this documentary. So you've got real people interviewed, yes, against grey backdrops, but you've got Matthew Modine playing Rick Singer, who is the independent college counsellor who had this scheme, Brendan, where he would help the children of the rich and well-disposed to get or to guarantee, pretty much guarantee that their children got into the Ivy League colleges, the elite third level universities in the US. And he had a particular way of doing it. Now, in between that, we have kind of real characters, real people who were involved, people who knew Rick Singer, people who were, in fact, the Stanford sailing coach, who was kind of a key part of the plan at one point. But we also then have Matthew Modine playing the part of Rick Singer and going around forever, interminably on his mobile phone, because a lot of the dialogue and a lot of the evidence was accrued by wiretaps, so they have hours upon hours of transcripts of phone conversations.
So they have recreated a guy talking on his mobile phone,
who's basically the exposition of exactly what's happening. So the plot unfolds by him telling his co-conspirators, if you want to call him that. And there's wonderful kind of what's great about him is he was a failed, let's call him that, a failed high school basketball coach, and he dressed the part, and he continued to dress the part when he became this independent councillor. Ostensibly, he started off legit and he would go around to people's houses and they would pay him to tutor their children, because, of course, the main way into colleges in America is standardised testing. And, of course, you know, you can get used to kind of filling in A, B, C, and it's all multiple choice stuff. So a lot of that was kind of coaching. But he stayed in his sweatpants, he stayed in his T-shirt and his runners, and he just dressed the part of a coach, and that was his gig. But he realised then, Brendan, there are three ways into college in America primarily. The front door, which is obviously, congratulations, Mr. O'Connor, you've done very well in your exams and you're very welcome to Harvard. The back door, which is thanks very much for your donation of $10 million and very welcome to Harvard, Mr. Brendan O'Connor, and you can stay in that dorm over there, which we've named after you thanks to your dad's very generous donation. Are the side door, which is where he excelled, which is minority sports programs, which is going back to the coaching idea again.
And is it any good?
Is it any good? It is. It's probably a bit too long.
Okay.
But it's a very entertaining story, and you will kind of, and Felicity Huffman obviously turns up in real footage because she's the poster child of where it went wrong. She did go to jail. She got sentenced. Oh yeah.
So a real thing happened there.
The real thing happened. The real question.
For all of 2 weeks.
Yes. Exactly. Okay. Was justice served, though? That's the question you'll be left wondering about. Nothing has happened to Rick Singer yet, because, you know, this is a conspiracy involving loads of players and it all hasn't come to light yet, and everyone hasn't been sentenced. But yeah, no, it's worth watching. It's probably about 20 minutes too long.
Okay, Jen, sticking with Netflix, White Lines was the big hit of Lockdown 1 for a lot of people in terms of a trashy watch. And Alex Pina is also, of course, Money Heist. A lot of people love that. He's got a new one on Netflix.
Yeah, I found White Lines to be really underwhelming. So I'm glad to see him kind of back in the kind of sphere that he's usually successful in. And I think, you know, everybody knows Money Heist has that real Tarantino edge to it. And I think this does as well, Sky Rojo. It's a really dark comic caper that follows three sex workers. They go on the run from their pimp and all the men that are brutalizing them in their lives. And they escape on this road trip and their tormentors are in hot pursuit. So it's like a Thelma and Louise style race for survival. And he's just given this real contemporary chaotic makeover, and that he has this visual flair that's somewhere between like an early 2000s MTV music video and Baz Luhrmann at his most deranged. And it has that real freewheel and vivacity that's pretty divisive, because you're either fully immersed in his style and you love it, or you think it's too over the top. It's never boring. That's one thing. Never
okay,
boring.
And that's up on Netflix now, is it?
Right now, yeah.
Okay. Jen, tell us before, we'll take a quick break in a second, but tell us first, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, this is the last season, is it?
So either you'll be breathing a sigh of relief or you're like me and you'll be crying into your big salad. I owe a lot to the family, Kay. They've gotten me through my worst hangovers over the years on the couch, and they've given me some solid gold entertainment. But I think they've made the right decision. I think the show has become a lot darker in recent seasons. Rather than being this escapist entertainment show, it's become this meditation on the corrosiveness on fame and what actually happens when you get everything you've always wanted. Good for you if you think it's a badge of honour that you've avoided watching Kardashians or whatever. I know a lot of people think that, but I do think that they've shaped the pop culture world that we're living in, and you can't avoid them because they've influenced so much, from your daughter or your sister's makeup to the pornography you watch. The Kardashians have actually seeped into it all. They are the first family of postmodern pop culture, and they're reality TV royalty, and I'm dying to see what they do next after this. I know they've signed a deal with Disney Plus, so who knows what's going to happen to them.
Who knows, indeed. And that's on E or...
or Hayu. E tonight, okay. Hayu right now.
Okay, excellent. Right, let's take a quick break and we'll be back with some movies on TV.
Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, Owen Sweeney and Jen Gannon still with us, and we're talking about what to watch on TV next week. Owen, any good movie on TV that people should set the video for?
There's one good one tomorrow, that's Monday, at about 5 to 10 on TG Gahar. It's not a vintage week for getting the highlights right, Brendan, I will be honest, but The Crying Game from 1992 is on TG Gahar tomorrow evening, and it's one of those movies, you know, when people always talk about it, you know, can you imagine re-watching something for the first time and that experience again? And I suppose, given it, the twist and the nature of it, and kind of it's Jen talked about the pop culture world, it kind of defines something for a period there in terms of shock, surprise, horror. And I suppose, or perhaps not shock, surprise, horror, for a whole generation. And you can imagine sitting down and watching that, or watching it with someone who hasn't seen it before. So that thrill is there. But it's so much more than the twist as well, isn't it? I mean, you're going back to 92, so it's pre-ceasefire. You've got Stephen Ray playing Fergus. You've got Forrest Whitaker in there as well. And of course, the brilliant Jay Davidson as Dil, the girlfriend. But also Miranda Richardson and the aforementioned Adrian Dunbar is in there as well. So there's a great cast. And of course, Neil Jordan won the Oscar, beating out, I suppose, a stiff competition from the likes of Woody Allen as well in that year. So, and well deserved. And it's a movie that kind of deserves rewatching because you're only thinking about the twist, and if that's all that's in your head, there's so much more there as well. And Stephen Ray is fantastic, and they're all fantastic.
Okay, so that's Monday 5 to 10 on TG Cahir. And Jen, have you picked a movie on terrestrial TV for us?
Yeah, tonight at 9 o'clock on RT1, there's Manchester by the Sea, and this was
a cheery little number.
Very cheery for a Sunday. Yeah, I mean, it's not light Sunday night fare, but if you're in need of a good weep, this will definitely hit the spot. And I think sometimes we're at the end of our tether right now, so you need a good cry. So this was the big Oscar clincher in 2017. It was nominated for Best Film, and it won Casey Affleck's Best Actor Award, as well as Best Screenplay for Kenneth Lonergan. So it's very Eugene O'Neill. It's heavy going, emotional watch, centred around families. And Casey Affleck, who plays Lee, he's a janitor consumed by the grief of his past. He returns to his hometown to look after his dead brother's teenage son, who's played brilliantly by Lucas Hedges. And it's a real kind of, it's a delicate portrayal of grief and survival, because Lee is haunted by the memories he tried to escape from when he left the town, and he has this very damaged reputation he's never broken free of. Just to say, Michelle Williams has a really minor role as Lee's ex-wife Randy, but she packs the biggest emotional punch in the whole film. You cannot take your eyes off her. She has this very quiet, a dignified performance that's just mesmerising. She didn't win the Oscar that year because I think her role was so brief in it, but my God, she's so good in it. And I just think, very emotional though.
Do you know what? I had avoided that first time around, but you've actually sold it to me. I don't know what that says about me, but that sounds pretty good. And Jen, you want to give a quick mention that Fleabag's second season is continuing on RTE2 on Mondays.
Yeah, Monday at 9. And Fleabag is one of the only shows that's proved me wrong to return for a second season, and it's miraculously improved on its first outing. And I honestly believe that this opening episode of the second season really could have worked well on, you know, theatre's most prestigious stages. It works up to this closing that's like heartbreaking and uplifting in equal measures, and it's really powerful. And I just think that Fleabag manages to walk that fine line between comedy and tragedy. And the first season is all about grief and desperation, but the second season is all about the healing nature of love in all its forms, and it's so optimistic and beautiful.
Yeah,
even
it's
bittersweet.
Great. It's great. RT2 Monday at 9 p.m. and I presume you can catch up with some of them on the player as well. Owen, just about time to talk about a new movie that dropped on Sky Movies last night, and I think for people of a certain generation, this guy's soundtracked their misspent youth.
Absolutely. Creation Stories. It's the Alan McGee story. Like all good biopics, it is basically Print the Legend stuff, isn't it? And it doesn't really matter because it makes for entertaining viewing. It's written or co-written by Irvin Welsh, so it has lots of Trainspotting kind of references, our kind of antecedent. Spud from Trainspotting plays Alan McGee, who's 50, by the way, Brendan, and he carries off the middle period of Alan McGee's life in his 20s and 30s very well. It's fantastic. Is it fantastic?
It's good old romp. You'd kind of want to know the story though, because nothing is really explained, but if you know what's going on, you can fill in the gaps.
It's for the converted, 100%. You're absolutely right. I mean, the whole movie could be told in his t-shirts, because you've got The Mary Chain, you've got My Bloody Valentine, you've got Bandwagon-esque by the Teenage Fan Club in there as well, and of course Oasis, where he strikes gold. But it'll entertain you. If you don't want to weep tonight, watch that.
And look, in terms of all the bands you just mentioned there, he's responsible for birthing so many extraordinary albums, and we'll play a bit of something from one of them now. But look, thank you very much, Owen and Jen. That's all we have time for today.